from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
We were kind of talking about how we wanted this to roll, and I'm like, I put together all the topics, but I was just like, Jake, you can't just be like, uh-huh.
You can't be me, Jake.
You can't be Ryan. What do you mean? I usually give a good amount of...
I can't tease you because this is your show now. What, I can't say anything mean?
It's one of my rules.
I don't like these rules.
Hey, who has the gun?
You do.
Indeed.
Well, we can still roll. The thing is, you pick the topics. So basically, coming into this, I'm not necessarily an expert on these particular ones. You know me. I'm like pretty deep in the whole atheist gunk. So I can still hold my own, but it'll be interesting because it's kind of like we're going to orient it towards your vision.
Well, this is the interesting thing, and this is something that I've realized, and this is actually why I think that what you do is pretty important, is the fact that when you read over a lot of what other people say, they throw out, here's what's going on, and it's wrong. And you kind of think about it, and obviously you got that gut feeling for why it's wrong, but it's hard to kind of explain and pull it out and really go into all of the reasons behind it and just lay it out, which I think is basically what you do best.
I have a lot of anger. You know what? Here's the thing. I realize I'm an aggressive person. Mm. You know, I can't fucking deny that I'm aggressive. I just try to channel that aggressiveness into constructive ways. I mean, would we consider this constructive? I suppose so. We're building something.
Indeed.
A giant list of podcasts that keeps growing.
A gigantic treasure chest of dreams.
Treasure chest of dreams. So what are we going to be talking about first? What is the one topic that you think... that you wanted to talk about? Because I remember last show you hinted about it on the bonus podcast. You're like, I've been thinking about this one thing and I wanted to mention it, and I've been looking forward to this. So
that topic is going to come up later. I've been talking about the Daily Dish, which is a website that you should be checking out on the Atlantic. It's a big blog. It's run by this. It's really hilarious. It's run by a gay right wing British Republican guy
who lives in the United States.
Yeah, and basically it's a big blog, and they cover all news, political, entertainment. It's a great way to pick up a general vibe of everything that's going on in the world if you happen to live in a garage like I do.
I guess my whole thing that I don't like about Andrew Sullivan is that he doesn't write, he just quotes.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. But here's the thing, is that I don't mind somebody quoting if that's all they need to do. When he writes, he does knock it out of the park. You know what I mean? And
I've never actually been able to read any of his longer things, because every time I go check out a post, it's somebody else talking about it. And, you know, to some degree, and this is what I try to do when I write for The Good Atheist, is that I really don't want to just quote people. Like, it's very rare that you're going to find me actually putting any block quotes or that kind of stuff. Or if I do, it's going to be like a sentence, because I think you should be bringing in your own kind of explanation about it. I mean, just because a journalist wrote it doesn't mean that's necessarily the best way to convey the idea.
But you know what is interesting, though? Just going through Google News, looking for atheism and religion-related news, I mean, before I have a couple of atheism websites on there, and of course I read The Good Atheist, but I realized there's a shitload of stuff that's going on that isn't being talked about on The Good Atheist. And that's not because it's not interesting. It's just that there's nothing really to add to it. And I'm like, that's a bit of not a disservice. And it's like, you know, we can't be everything to everyone. We're already spending all day blogging, 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 blogging. It's like, more.
We can't possibly blog about everything. It's one of the things you're like, I wanted to talk about some of the topics you're going to mention, and I was going to write about them, but I was like, I can't really add that much. You know, like a fucking, for me, one sentence saying, I think that blows, you might as well write nothing.
But hey, you know, I honestly think that might be, as they say in Pulp Fiction, that's pride fucking with you. And you just got to give people the information and just the content itself. If the content itself is interesting enough to merit somebody else reading it, I say we should share it.
I guess the problem is because I get into it so much that I assume everybody has the same feeds and everything else like that. And I'm like, nobody comes to The Good Atheist for breaking news. I mean, if you come to the site for breaking news, what is wrong with you? Like, you need to get deeper into it, because the blog itself is just kind of like, here are the topics that I wanted to talk about on sort of like the general list of like 10,000 topics. And like, these are the ones that I have something to say about. But you're right. I mean, there is a lot of news. Eh? I mean, you can go through and you could just be like, fuck, we could do show after show after show just of news, but it would be kind of dry.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm perfectly happy with this, just sticking to things that are close to our heart. So that being said, Andrew Sullivan's vlog, pretty good. I recommend many of you check it out, even though it is just a bunch of quotes. It'll give you an overall view of everything that's going on, which is what I need. And they had a whole bunch of stuff on new atheism, which is basically the argument that that the new atheists are trying to set an agenda and set a narrative and create this movement to fight religion. And that's basically a new religion, and it's a very and the argument as to whether or not it's a right-wing ideologue to take.
But here's the thing. I mean, you're reading this from Andrew Sullivan's blog, and in most of those types of political blogs and websites, you hear about this new atheist thing. And I'm going to tell you, in the basic or general atheist community, new atheist is a fucking just a buzzword. It doesn't mean anything. It is an entity that has been created. It's kind of like the same way that I'll say the religious right. I mean, I say it just basically because it's a simpler way to describe a number of religious organizations that are very, very conservative. But it's not as though it's an organized movement that fucking meets every, you know, Tuesday and says, well, here are the agendas for Christianity. It just... It's kind of a general trend.
But
right?
this is the funny thing. I mean, this is how many of the people on the religious right basically say, hey, there's nothing suspicious going on. But to me, these kinds of movements that basically just kind of take shape just from the ether and they kind of come together, these are the worrisome things, because these are kind of those memes that push forward and change things. And I don't want to talk about the new atheism thing yet. I'm saving that for later in the show, because I've got something even more important to talk about, and that is Brad Pitt.
Right. Brad Pitt, who declared that he's 20% atheist and 80% agnostic, if I'm
But you
correct,
know what?
Right?
You know what that means to me? And this is why I have a hard time getting on agnostic people's asses, is because I know when push comes to shove, most of them will come over onto our side. It's like at the end of the Lord of the Rings, where they all had to fight, they came together and they fought. They didn't fucking pussy out, because, you know...
Well, it would have been less of an interesting... It would have been a crappy story if everyone had pussied out.
Well, it wouldn't have really mattered, because they were all... You know, they had nothing to do with anything. It was all on those fucking hobbits.
Seriously. I'm like, why? Focus on the hobbits. This other battle stuff? All pointless.
What I would say, focus on the battles. The hobbit stuff? God, let me tell you what, that, how long, there's like 8 hours worth of movies there, if you watch the extended versions, 9?
Dude, and, I don't know. And more than 9, probably.
All I know is that, man, those hobbits, they are downers. Just total downers.
Well, they start off pretty happy enough with that nice music, and they're drinking all that beer. And they have fun memories.
And smoking weed.
They fucking smoke a lot of weed. That's what I like about hobbits. Of course hobbits are peaceful. They smoke weed all day. And they farm, I guess. Although I've never seen them plow a field, but I assume they farm.
But anyways, yeah, I just wanted to bring up, it seems like all of a sudden we're getting more and more atheism people coming out. Daniel Radcliffe from Harry Potter, he also proclaimed himself a 100% atheist.
Well, and a huge fan of Richard Dawkins, although Dawkins said that he was not a huge fan of Harry Potter, so hopefully there's no snub there.
What a dour thing to say.
It is a bit dour. Look, I didn't like
that child's movie. I've been guilty of this myself before. I'm trying to think of the last kids movie that I really, really shat on for being a kids movie. I think it was Speed Racer.
Speed Racer is just all around terrible, dude.
Yeah, but there's been a whole bunch of kids movies that I like. That was poorly written. I'm like, it's a kids movie. It's like saying you don't like that. It's like, wow, thanks, Dawkins.
I think every time the person says they don't like the Harry Potter, the books or the movies, I'm like, why is your heart so black? It's a fine thing. I mean, I tried reading the first one, and the only reason I can't is that, you know how I get with fiction. Bored out of my mind. I'm like, I'm sick and tired of hearing about people's lives. Teach me something.
Yeah,
but that's
much.
Just me. That's just me. Mm. I prefer entertainment in movie forms, but that's because you know me as a guy who doesn't just watch movies. I try to absorb movies. You know, that's what I like about them. The visual aspect of them is appealing. But yeah, come on, Richard Dawkins. I mean, lighten up, dude. Fucking Harry Potter. It is enjoyable. But you know what? Here's what I thought, actually. When I heard Brad Pitt coming out
As a, I don't know, 20%.
As a pseudo-atheist.
Pseudo-atheist.
I mean, you know, if you got 20% in there, is it safe to say that atheism and not, like, for all of the blurring of the line, if you're a 20% atheism, that means you're basically an atheist.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, here's the thing, too. I mean, the other side, he didn't say that the other side was religious. He just said the other side is, I don't know. And Richard Dawkins, again, we're talking about him, he had this sort of, like, list this of how you could kind of represent strong atheism, weak atheism, so on and so forth. Now, 20%, that would be basically weak atheism. You know, if the guy says he's 20% atheist, it just means that he doesn't really care all that much. He takes the position mostly that, well, we can't really know, but the arguments for atheism seem stronger, and if push came to shove, yeah, I would say, like, Sky God is, or Magic Man is not around, does not exist. So I can understand that. I think it is kind of funny that more and more celebrities seem to be kind of jumping on that bandwagon. And I don't know if it's just kind of one of those things where a person's saying, hey, I want to be in the news, because fuck, you will be in the news when you come out as godless now. Mm-hmm. It's a fucking big deal.
Yep.
But a guy like Brad Pitt doesn't need more news. So it's just, I think it's just a lot of people that are not religious. If they can get that opportunity, they would love to tell other people that they don't believe, you know? Just because all the time they probably get somebody in their face saying, like, hey, have you heard about Christ? And it's just like, dude, man, I'm trying to be polite, but get the fuck out of my face with your Jesus guy. I just don't want to hear anything about him. I do not believe in him. I don't think there's a hell. Just get out of my face.
I've come to the conclusion that I wouldn't give a damn about people saying, like, oh, Jesus and God are so great, if they weren't at the same time trying to stop stuff like stem cell research and gays marrying. Religious people in general I will get along with all day, so long as we have the same values when it comes to important shit like that. Like, you know, women needing to be allowed to have abortions if they need to have them, or like being able to heal people who are trapped in wheelchairs at the expense of some gooey uncooked egg. And so,
well, the tragedy too of it, of the whole thing, and the impracticality of thinking, well, we shouldn't have stem cell research, is the fact that there are still abortions going on. So we just throw the most valuable cells we've ever discovered in the garbage. It's what we do. We throw them away because we're not allowed to test on them. Their thinking is like, well, if you start, you're never going to stop. You're going to be a bird in babies all day.
You're going to be addicted to stem cells.
You're going to be eating them. Remember in South Park there where, who.
Christopher Reeves cracking them open
and eating babies. It's pretty much that kind of ridiculous idea that if you just start, then you won't be able to stop. We throw them out.
Actually, on a quick side note before we move on, did you hear the latest thing that they were looking into with stem cells? How they want to make stitches with incorporate stem cells into them, so your wounds will heal like significantly faster.
That is awesome.
I know.
I mean, didn't I tell you, actually, I wrote about this a little while ago, that they had started really developing this type of powder that when you put on a limb that has been severed, it starts to regrow. We will soon, I mean, we're 30 years away from this, where you're not going to, you know, ever hear about an amputee or a person in a wheelchair. We're going to discover ways to no longer have to put up with that bullshit, which is funny because here are all these people trying to, you know, build elevators for handicaps and all that kind of stuff. We're trying to, why don't we take that money and try to get rid of the symptoms of being handicapped? Can't walk, missing limbs. These are things that we can try to, you know, fix. We have the technological know-how. We just need to really invest more into it. We know the fundamentals. We just have to put them in practice now.
But God doesn't want you to do it.
No.
Those are his toys.
A dusty old manual tells you you're not supposed to mess with that. I mean, you know what I think the greatest story in the Bible is about don't play God is? The Tower of Babel. I think that there's no greater example of sort of like God bitch-slapping us back down. Because the whole story is, well, humanity comes together. They try to build a tower to go to heaven so that they can, I guess, meet God. Well, God becomes very disturbed from this project and decides that everybody's going to have a different language so that they can't get along. And I'm like, wow, there's a clear story. The Bible says don't work together and don't try to sort of, like, outdo me. But this is a jealous God of the Old Testament. Of course he's going to fucking do that shit.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, this is not a good story. This is just one of those, this is another one of those instances where you're just generally not impressed by this character.
It's one of those hilariously retarded ones that...
that I want to know how people justify that one. You know, like, I've never actually dealt with a Christian who's trying to justify the story of the Tower of Babel?
Do most of them take that as a literal whatever, kind of like people being like, we found Noah's Ark?
No. I mean, there is no archaeological evidence for a Tower of Babel. I mean, it's just a story. But my whole thought is that I'm pretty sure people interpret that as saying, don't disobey God. Meanwhile, they ignore everything about that is morally disgusting about this entire story, which is... God doesn't want you to get along. That's the story.
Everybody worked together to do something amazing, and God was like, suck my dick.
He's like, you're not showboating me, you primitive apes.
Okay, let's get into some actual news. I wanted to talk... This is a bit of a topic that we've gone over time and time again about the whole In God We Trust thing. This is the interesting thing about it, though, to me, is that Congress just... basically passed a bill to put In God We Trust on a new Capitol Visitor Center in Washington, D.C.
Didn't they spend like $300 million on this thing, and it's like a gigantic clusterfuck, though, at the end of the day?
Yeah, but that's everything in
Washington. Oh, that's a government thing.
Yeah, exactly. But I just don't understand how... I can get how we're dealing with, you know, for the last 50 years, all of the buildings that have In God We Trust emblazoned on it, because it is only from 1956.
Right.
But I just don't understand how we are continuing to build things with this on it. It just seems very strange to me.
It's not that strange when you understand from the perspective of Gore Vidal. You know who Gore Vidal is?
I remember him as quoted from The Simpsons and that he is a homosexual.
Well, Gore Vidal is an interesting character, but he's always said that basically the problem with the United States is that they have no real concept of history, even their own history. You know, that they have amnesia. So for the most part, if you ask any fucking person how long In God We Trust has been in, you know, on the money, what do you think the typical response is?
Since the dawn of time.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. They have no idea that it was essentially just a way to fight the fears of godless communism. Nobody realizes this, and it's just one of those things where if you can bring it up, just like you can bring up the fact that most of the founding fathers were deists or, you know, non-believers, and no one's going to accept that. They're like, no, you're wrong. What are you supposed to do when you deal with an individual that is so obviously wrong and thinks that you are mistaken? You can show them evidence, and they just still won't care. They'll turn around and they'll say, well, if you don't like it, go somewhere else, or this fucking America, and America's God's nation.
Well, the way that they're swinging it now is that they want to put it in there as a nod to the heritage and culture of the people who were around before. And that's kind of the argument now that it's the same way, say, you remember we were watching Basic Instinct 2, don't ask us why.
It's terrible.
It's got awful.
There's not even any nudity till fucking, what, 40 minutes into the movie?
And it's not good nudity either.
It really isn't. It's sad. That's what the movie is. It's sad to watch Sharon Stone, who's lost most of her sex appeal, almost look like she's begging for sex from a boring-ass British guy with a terrible hairdo. It's like, that's the movie. So if that interests you, go check it out.
Yeah, but they had a whole bunch of law scenes where you know, they have everybody wearing the wigs.
Those ridiculous wigs.
The wigs are ridiculous enough when they're sitting on the heads of people that are properly cast for those roles, but when you start getting all of these different minorities with these wigs on, you're like, this looks just completely ridiculous, and you really start to realize that all of this heritage and culture stuff that they're keeping around is just dumb and stupid.
It's a bunch of bullshit. Basically.
Why do we not get rid of these ridiculous trappings from hundreds of years ago? And that's kind of my argument as far as I just don't understand why anybody continues to bring up things like heritage and culture when they're obviously pulling us apart.
Well, I think that there's an interesting... There are interesting ways to celebrate culture. Like, for instance, here in Montreal, there's a festival that goes on from the 19th of July, I think, to the 26th. And basically every day... There is a, or every Sunday, sorry, something like this, during a whole month, they have different cultures that have foods and sort of dances and that kind of stuff. You know, like the very best of each country's culture is allowed to be displayed, and, you know, you
showcased.
And showcased. And I'm like, that is a good display, because they show us something really interesting about our own history and our past. You know, like, for instance, something as simple as fireworks, you know. Well, the reason why we have fireworks is because the Chinese used to do it to try to scare away the big dog that used to eat the sun or the eclipse, you know. Like, you got to scare this demon away with fireworks. So they didn't think about killing anybody with it. They were just thinking, let's scare away some demons. But it has an interesting application now, where just people make really beautiful and crazy elaborate explosions for our pleasure rather than our destruction. And that's kind of I see that as a way for you to incorporate culture into kind of like the new world. But there are certain cultural traditions that just need to go away, because they are either, you know, immoral, unhygienic, just all around terrible. And the only reason that they're being passed on is because we have a need to pass on traditions. It's not because traditions are good. It's just because we have that need. For the longest time, I mean, think about this. Where did you learn how to do most of your shit? You learned it from your parents. You learned it from your town. You learned it from your country. You learned the things that you needed to learn from the people around you. But now you can learn all kinds of stuff, and it doesn't have to come from the same people. I mean, I view culture increasingly as just becoming a stylized versions, like the same way that these festivals are. They're stylized versions, and they're great.
Yeah, nowadays, you'll have an Italian kid, and you go over to his house, and he'll serve you better Chinese food than a Chinese person will. And that's just because everything's blending, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want us to lose the great thing about these traditions. I just want us to shed away the parts that aren't necessary. And in God we trust. A tradition since 1956, it's not a good tradition. It flies contrary to the very fucking nature of your own country. It's like, we shall, you know, Congress shall make no law encouraging sort of a particular religion.
I was reading some of the religious sites as to their opinion on this, because I wanted to see kind of a counterbalance of it. And one of the guys had an interesting point, which smelled like bullshit to me, but I just wanted to tell you it just so you could hear it, is that he argued that the founding fathers were actually saying that the government wouldn't fuck with religion. Not, like, basically, government wouldn't involve itself into religion, not that religion wouldn't involve itself into government. That's how he interpreted the First Amendment.
Yeah, but that's his interpretation. Look, the classic interpretation is basically to say that if you want to have a country where people have the right to practice religion, you need to make sure that religion itself will never, ever take part in the government. Because what do religions want when they're in power? They want no other religion except for theirs. So you do have to force religion out of government, because that's what it naturally does. It's like, as soon as government is involved in religion, you get situations like in Iran or in fucking Ireland. And it's very embarrassing. You know, these countries are backwards in a lot of respects because of that involvement. But if you read it very clearly, the Constitution says that you cannot also, you know, promulgate religion, and that's a clear element of the Constitution itself. You're making no special provisions for or against it. So yeah, of course you can ignore the first part and say, well, they just don't they just want people to be free. Well, I have to be free from religion, dude. Give me that freedom. You already have your religion. What else do you want? You want everybody else to believe what you do? Sorry, dog, not going to fucking happen.
Speaking of religions that are involved with governments, or rather non-religions, you know, a whole bunch of countries got their foot in the religion jar.
Door. How about foot in religion's
there
door?
There you go. I was trying to combine.
You
cookie
had the
jar
whole dick in the jar idea. In
no,
your
no,
head.
No, 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 no dick in the jar. It was hand in the cookie jar. Like,
oh, okay, okay, okay.
Because, you know, Ireland, with what they're doing with the not the Ryan report, but I guess the new one, the Ryan Squared report, which will
Ryan two,
and Iran with everything that's going over there. But let's take a look at a country that has. Basically a government that's all about being atheist. And let me tell you what, this is not a positive, fun story. This is North Korea.
No, it's not.
Publicly executing a 33-year-old mother of three. Lots of threes in there. Numerologists, I'm sure, would be like, ooh, very interesting.
Don't forget the fact that her family, her entire family, is now in jail.
Yeah.
Some kind of crazy re-education camp.
Yeah. So she was killed, publicly executed for distributing Bibles in North Korea, which is a officially atheist state.
Man, it's not officially anything. This is a fucking country that's still run by a dead guy. You know, it's a nectocracy. I don't even know if the word exists, because it is unprecedented in the history of mankind that a dead man should still be the leader of a country. and that his son, an egomaniac, is basically the commander-in-chief. Like, you're just... This place is really messed up. And it gives atheism a fucking bad name, like, unbelievable bad name.
So you're kind of saying that this is the equivalent of all of those... you remember in Africa... There was a period of time where there was a whole bunch of countries that pretended to be democratic, and of course they just completely got it wrong.
Dude, do you know what Korea is actually called? It's called the Democratic Republic of North Korea, like the full name. Mm. They have the word democracy in there.
Hey, it's smart. Scientologists with science and
there you go.
That
I mean, yeah, it's fucking doublespeak is what it is. It's classic Orwellian doublespeak. But you know what? Here's the thing. I mean, I understand there is a sick and twisted logic to why they, you know, sort of communist states do this, and it's not because they believe that atheism is just so awesome, is that they know that, you know, religions tend to organize themselves pretty well, and they can become a rival to your own power. So of course their whole logic is that we must kill all these individuals, but these are not countries that have anything like human rights or anything close to laws that are for the people. So if a person turns around and says, this is what happens in an atheist state, I'm like, do you really believe that if all of a sudden, tomorrow, one fucking country like that's in the West, let's say Sweden or Finland.
What was it? I think I heard statistics, something about Denmark being overwhelmingly not giving a shit about religion and them just being just fine.
Yeah, exactly. Denmark's a perfect example. I think over there, like, the rate of unbelief is 80% or something really high. For all intents and purposes, it is an atheist state. It's just, it doesn't outlaw religion because no one cares. You know, in North Korea, of course, they care. Their government is crazy.
They outlaw everything.
They outlaw absolutely everything. They outlaw free thought. They outlaw, I mean, who knows what kind of crazy rules they got over there. It's just insane. I mean, people live on $47 a day. This is the same country where we have to feed them.
When they live on $47 a day?
Oh, no, sorry, I'm sorry. $47 a month is how much the regular salary is, sorry. $47 a month, that's not a lot of money, man.
That sounds about how much I make.
That's true, that's true. But you don't have to worry about, you know, being executed for making fun of your world leader.
Not yet, anyways.
No, not yet.
Okay, let's quickly talk on the new atheism thing again, because I want to roll it into something else. I just wanted to bring up the idea again of new atheism being a surprisingly right-wing idea, because basically look at, say, Christopher Hitchens and how he is a right-wing policy hawk. And his basic opinion, and this is the opinion that's shared of a lot of other of our big atheist names, is the idea that, say, oh, Muslim extremism is a really dangerous thing, and we have to politically do something to stop it. Now, how do you can say that new atheism is just a construct, but how can you say that atheism isn't kind of getting tangled up in some pretty weird right-wing foreign policy?
Well, you know, since atheism itself is not an ideology, I think that the problem is, right when you have that conversation of, the conversation that comes after I don't believe in God is like, okay, well, what now? And I think that a lot of people are probably sort of like, they look at religion and they identify it as the major source of all the world's problems, which I think is a fucking mistake. Look, the problems that we have in this world aren't caused by religion. Religion is one of those things that's entangled in most of the conflicts. It's undeniable that it's a part of it. And the biggest part of it is that it creates, I guess, in people this idea, this static idea of what the universe is like, what their place in it is, and what other people that believe in something different, you know, where do they belong in your schema, right? I think that that's kind of like the divisive point, and that's the point that I always try to fight. I'm like, look, okay, at the end of the day, I actually really don't care what people believe in. But it's the consequence of that belief that really upsets me. So that if two parents, like those, the case of the Worthingtons who had a daughter, baby daughter that they let die.
Of pneumonia.
Of pneumonia. Well, actually she was choked by a cyst. Like just a fucking regular cyst. Lump full of liquid that you just needed to lance and put antibiotics on it. Kid dies because the parents don't believe in science. Their beliefs had a consequence on the health of their baby daughter. Now, the tragedy is, of course, they were found not guilty because everyone thinks that to put them in jail would be to infringe on their religious rights. They're like, they should be able to practice what they want. There are limits to that kind of stuff. You can practice what you want so long as it affects only you, but it's not really generally the rule that people follow. They don't want that. They want it to have kind of an influence on the outside world. So I can understand the movement of the new atheists to say we have to fight back as fucking hard as we can against this. And I think that a lot of people who sort of take the side that there is no God are going to play around with a couple of different, I don't want to say ideologies, but they're going to find themselves sometimes on different spectrums. Like, for instance, I was accused of being very right wing on my on my opinions about the burqa. And I don't deny that those are some pretty radical opinions that I have on it. I struggle with those all the time. And I hope that the so-called new atheists, even though I don't know if that's a particular group or not, but I do hope that some of the more radical ones also tend to sort of like question their own ideas. Because obviously if you don't, then you're guilty of the same thing of your adversaries, you know? Like that's the fundamental core of it. If you are not willing to challenge your own beliefs, they're probably wrong. They're probably wrong. You should be challenging your own beliefs all the fucking time. And like, why do you think that your beliefs are right, you know, compared to somebody else's who's wrong? And if you can't answer that question, and if you can't still be somewhat skeptical of even your own opinions, then you are a radical and you are fucking crazy. That's my opinion on that.
Yeah, I can pretty much agree with that. Because I was kind of good. I wanted to go into the idea of when you're looking at your own atheist beliefs and your own atheist views. I think it's always an important thing to kind of ask where the fuck you're going with them, you know. And I don't mean you. I mean everybody. Where the heck you think atheism is? You want it to go? Where you want the world to be in like 15 or 30 years? And try to figure out a way to get there, and not just through being a bastard to religious people, which is kind of, I guess, the battlefield that we have right now is just disagreeing with religious people. We talk about it every single show. We're talking about them, not really about us.
Well, in a way, there is no us. I mean, we reject the idea of God. And the rest of it, I mean, people already have moral foundations. It's kind of like the guy who wrote the little book of atheist spirituality. He had a good point. He basically said that simply because he lost his religious belief doesn't mean he lost any of his moral codes. His moral codes remained. All that he chose to do is suddenly, is to decide that there really was no God behind it. That's all. That's a small little thing. But it has a huge impact nowadays because there is this notion, there is this belief that if you don't fucking, believe in God, then the whole goddamn world is going to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
That everybody's going to be like a savage and a crazy man is going to be like, the struggle for nature all of a sudden. And to a large degree, I guess what we try to do is we put that in everybody's face. That's a goddamn lie. That's a bold-faced lie that has no backing whatsoever. But it's still, we're still fighting to get people to listen to us. And that's why the conversation hasn't changed, because they're not listening.
But you're saying that atheism is a non-group. You were one of the people, I remember one of your older articles was basically saying that atheism a religion, and you were saying atheists should get organized and get structured. And basically that seems kind of like an argument that's coming out a lot now, saying that we need to set an atheist identity and we need to start pushing that as a group.
I know, and I was talking about this in 2007, whereas I lamented the fact that we weren't like religion, at least in terms of providing support for people who don't believe, because the honest truth is that when you're an atheist, you can be fucking very alone. So to that degree, I do think it's important to have a movement, but this is why I like humanism. I'm like, this is the natural stepping stone, I find. Humanism is sort of like that next... That next inroad that we have to make. And maybe after that, it goes beyond humanism. You know, maybe we look at more than just ourselves. And there are plenty of people who do that already. You know, care about animals, care about fucking insects, care about everything that's alive, you know?
Ooh, sounds pretty pussy.
Well, we're probably going to be on the wrong side of history when it comes to eating meat anyways. But my whole point is saying, like, okay, well, let's go back. Let's think, what is a philosophy that we can all kind of agree to that does not require a God as a moral arbiter, and that is comprehensive about how human beings are. And humanism fits that very, very well. I think that should be kind of like the next discussion, saying, okay, well, you're an atheist, but let's become humanists. Let's fucking pimp that shit out. But right now, atheism it's the word that's hot. That's why everybody's fucking embarking on it. But we all have this implicit understanding of what atheism is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is close to humanism. It is kind of a humanistic philosophy of saying, well, there is no God, but we're still good. But it's ill-defined. That's just because that is the nature of disbelief. It's always ill-defined.
This is why I'm back and forth on it. Because on one side, I worry about this whole new atheism thing, basically developing a narrative and for a group of people that I want nothing to do with. It's basically what I was telling you about a couple weeks ago, where I was saying Republicans aren't Republicans anymore. Democrats aren't Democrats. So what happens when atheists are no longer atheists, and the atheists are just a bunch of groups that I fucking despise?
I don't know. But I don't know if you'll get to that point.
On the other... Oh, I think it can, because, you know, so many people have so many different ideas of how things should work, because they all try and build on top of, you know, atheism is just the non-belief of God. So everybody, because what happens is that you have, and this is the other side of it, is that people spend so much time arguing against all these individual religious things, like in God We Trust on a visitor center, or them trying to change the educational system, instead of working towards just setting up a very broad atheistic guideline of saying, we don't want any of this stuff involved in the government, and to really codify that as anytime they say, well, you guys are just anti-theists, say, no, this is the core belief of atheism, is that you should not be putting your crap on us. And that should just be the number one thing that we always go back to. It just seems like we're dressing everything up, and we're getting really confused with where atheism is supposed to go, because we've been turned into anti-theists just because of all the stupid, horrible crap that religious people do.
I think the problem here is that although we have a lot of atheist writers that'll tell you why you don't believe, we don't have a lot of atheist philosophers that are coming out and trying to describe what the new morality should be. You know, it's kind of... It's that debate when I think to myself, well, I want to write that book on atheism, and I have written a significant portion of it. And you know as well as I do that there are certain parts that I don't want to include about it, which are, you know, related more to philosophy. It's just I'm not ready to reveal some of these things because they're still kind of works in progress.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I couldn't help thinking about was this idea that I always just talk about, is that basically that I call the triumph of empathy. And it's something that I've thought a lot about, that in society, like, you can always tell the difference between those people that are shitheads and those people that are compassionate from sort of what have their own experiences been. Experience is plays a huge factor in how a person is either moral or immoral, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, giving you an example, like, how many people that you know say that they were, you know, sons of wealthy individuals or whatever, and they were just general shits. Like, they didn't care about anybody. They just did their own thing, and it didn't matter if there were any consequences, negative consequences of their actions. They developed a very poor empathy because they never really needed to see all kinds of things like, you know, strife, struggle. These are things that they're not introduced to, so they don't really understand what that feels like, which is why I've always said that if you want to get a person to be moral, you have to test them. And with opportunities that create empathy. Remember that photograph of that little girl in Kenya, I think, or Nigeria, something like that, and she's starving to death, and there's a vulture nearby. And the guy who took that photo killed himself because the little girl died, and I think to some degree he felt so much empathy, he didn't want to live anymore.
Well, that guy had been photographing horrible things around the world for a really long
time.
But yeah.
All right, I won't say that's I think the photo probably pushed him over the edge. But this is an instance where, say, almost this person has too much empathy, where they are constantly suffering because of the suffering of others.
Mm.
And if you want to know, you know, how triumphant empathy is, well, consider the fact that if a person around you or in your circle is suffering of something, even a physical ailment, you will have some of the same symptoms. You will mimic them. Your body will mimic them. It's just a way for you to basically trigger your own empathy. And I think that our morality is based largely on empathy. The idea that if a person is wronged, you know, that retribution should be met, you know, that you want other people to live well because their well-being makes you feel good as well. And this is just one of the things that I think we should be talking about as atheists. We know there is no God. Okay, moving on. How do we really explain this kind of the questions that religious people ask us? Because I think the questions themselves are interesting. We should be answering them. We typically just ignore and focus on the fact, well, you believe in Sky God and Magic Man that fucking passes you all these rules, and they don't make any sense. And of course they don't, but we haven't really been able to give them something that's comparable or better.
Well, this is the funny thing about it, is when you think about the different directions that different religions end up taking, like, go back to go back to ancient Greece, where they had Zeus and Hercules and all these guys, and these were all very athletic, sporting type people. So because of that, the culture built around that, and it pushed towards the celebration of the human form. And look at what we have now with our religion, and it didn't really push us towards all that much. We didn't imagine a religion based completely around the advances of technology and science, and that was what it was going to be focused about. We could have gotten really far, and then it would have been a lot easier to just replace a couple of minor issues. But we've got so much that we have to do because our religion is just so kind of crappy.
Yeah, but look at this, all right? The Chinese have kind of like a word for crisis, which merges with opportunity, right? Because the Chinese recognizes anytime there's something happening that appears like a crisis, there's also an opportunity for change. And I think this is exactly the kind of stuff we're talking about. Like, I don't know who the next sort of like great atheist is. Like, there are four right now that are sort of high profile, but there can be more, and we want more. We need more. We need somebody else to come inside. I would love to hear some discussions about where to go next. You know, I want to be part of that discussion. I don't know if I should be the one who starts it because I'm a bit of a goofball. Mm. But nevertheless, I think that we really need to start thinking about, well, if there really is no God, what kind of morality do we want to have? What kind of, I don't want to say rules, but what part of the human condition do we want to foster, do we want to grow? I mean, I was talking about empathy as being a good example of, we need to start thinking about how we can trigger empathy into people. Like, if you meet someone and you think they're generally a piece of shit, odds are they have not been in situations where they have they've had to deal with that emotion, because it's one of those things you cannot ignore. All right, when you feel bad, have you ever noticed that it's really hard to stop feeling bad? It's just one of those things. You will feel bad until the problem is solved, and this is a great aspect of humanity. I mean, when you think about man is a moral animal. Man is a fucking moral animal. We are guided by a really powerful moral center, and that development is almost entirely in our cerebral cortex. Our higher thinking leads to morality. That's why, so you know, children, for instance, who have an underdeveloped cerebral cortex typically act like, you know, they're
little shits.
They're way more violent. They don't care about people around them and that kind of stuff. It's a good thing they're cute, let me just say that. Because otherwise you'd be like, get the fuck out of here, kid. You're a little bastard. But over time, you know, that part of their brain develops and become a moral animal. I'm like, that is amazing. Why are we not really focusing on that and exploiting that and making us even more moral than we are? Because we know that on the flip side, we can be pretty fucked up.
Well, look at this. How you could say that a person's moral development continues throughout their entire life, and for some people it's true, but as far as, for the most part, we leave it up to the parents, and the parents usually only try and instill these kinds of things in their kids up until the age of, say, 15, where they turn them loose on society. It's interesting to me that we don't spend more time working on morality and stuff like that. This is an overall thing that I have with school that I'm kind of playing around in my head. It's like, Why do we spend 12 years in English class? Why do we do this?
That seems like a lot of English. And meanwhile, we still suck at it. I'm like, that can't be right. It doesn't take 12 years to learn English.
Well, there's just a whole bunch of classes that probably could be better, you know, replaced with more important things, like, I don't know, morality,
but this
civics.
Is what I'm talking about. Look, we're stuck in the same old model that we have been for a long time. I mean, look at it in your house. Have you ever noticed the fact that the plugs in your wall are the same plugs they use in fucking 1930s? I mean, we have better technology now. Maybe shit that doesn't burst into flames or give you a shock that kills you.
Yeah, and you don't even want to think about how much fresh, drinkable water we waste every day flushing our toilets.
It is nonsense, but we're stuck with these very old habits, and it's time that we just drop them. We take what works, and we get rid of what doesn't. That's what we do in science.
But that would go against our heritage and our culture, Jake.
That leads us back to that whole bullshit saying, do not get caught in that whole cycle of tradition. Because once you do, you are trapped. And, you know, I don't want to sound like some kind of soothsayer or whatever, that's you know, one of these morons is going to tell you, the earth is going to end. No, but we are facing unique challenges that no other human being has ever faced before. And those challenges are going to come at us like a fucking freight train if we're not ready for it.
And hey, the same thing happened to people, you know, throughout the entire time of human civilization.
Now look at the Easter Island. They had fucking train come towards them pretty damn fast.
Some of these people passed, some of these people failed.
Yeah. I mean, so, for the most part, we have failed. Every single time we've been put up against these kinds of tests, we have failed. And again, like I said, the Easter Island is a perfect example. I mean, you know why they basically cut down all their trees in the Easter Islands? They were competing with one another to see who could, you know, put up the largest statues. But to do that, you had to cut the trees down to, you know, basically drag it and roll it and that kind of stuff. So basically, they cut it, all those trees down because of religion. Very impressive. Very impressive. I mean, that was a tradition that they should have stopped, okay? We're all very impressed from your statues, and there's a cool place to visit, but guess what? Everybody, you know, like everybody either had to escape to another island or they died.
This is a cautionary tale.
This is a cautionary tale, and the thing about the Easter Island, which is so unique, is that it's very, very isolated. I think it's like 1,000 kilometers from any sort of landmass, and not a large landmass, disparate pieces of landmass everywhere. I mean, it was the Easter Island, one of the later areas to be colonized. I think the latest one is actually Hawaii, strangely enough. It's like, I think colonization there happened at latest 1,000 years ago. So they haven't been on those islands for a very long time, and I believe they're Polynesians. But the point is, here's an isolated environment, and we failed that test. So if we go back and we look at that shit, I'm not impressed. You know, we need new solutions to old problems.
Yep.
And that's what we got to start doing. We got to start doing that with our morality. We have to start doing that with our culture, how we teach ourselves. But these should be interesting new challenges. We shouldn't be afraid of them.
Exciting new fucking challenges.
They're fucking exciting as hell, man. Like, holy shit, how can we redesign the way that we live our lives so that it's closer to how we act as human beings? It's more in line with what we know about human behavior and psychology. It's more in line with what we know about learning and all this other kind of stuff. I'm like, look, the future is bright. We just got to get off this fucking tradition goddamn railroad before it derails. Before it fucking derails and kills us all.
With that cheery point, I think I will wrap up the Awesome Atheist Show.